welcome to another edition of the Armchair Director. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at director Cary Joji Fukunaga and his 2018 miniseries, Maniac. Returning on the show today to talk about Maniac is Professor Marie Westhaver. Host Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So, this is the second time we've discussed a series, not a movie, but a series on the show. Back 2 years ago, we talked about Stranger Things when that show first hit, and that was becoming all the rage, and you can see my shirt there. But you did that.
For our viewers, yeah. It's a
Stranger Things t-shirt. From the second season, not the first, but got that. And then Matt, we talked about, he did a comparison between the Westworld movie and the TV series. So we've done a couple of times we've talked about. And the things I always like about watching these series instead of doing movies is that I think it's a lot of times you with modern series now is that they can get more creative and more out there, I think, than a lot of movies would be willing to take. Like another series was Legion on FX, and that's a superhero movie set in the X-Men series. And the stuff that goes on there in that show is a hell of a lot more interesting and creative than I think most of the X-Men movies or most comic book movies in general. And I think that's why I always appreciate watching stuff on television or Netflix or what have you.
There's really great stuff being done as original series. Justified, for example. Mm-hmm. Was that FX or was that...
That's FX.
FX, yeah. Really good stuff. And you have to sort of stumble across it or someone tells you about it. Mm-hmm. But when you find it, it's like, you know, you realize how ripe the industry is for original content. And it's great when they come up with a series that's finite, so you don't feel like you've signed on forever and ever and ever and ever.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing too, because like how many times like there's always like you got to check out this new series, you got to check out this new series, and you're like, I'm already on this series. You can't keep. It's like it's impossible to watch everything, and I still haven't like caught up on more like essential stuff. Like I've only seen the pilot episode of Mad Men, just because it's like 86 something episodes, and I don't know. I just don't have the investment to watch all of them. There's other shows I've never gotten around to watching, just because like Deadwood, because that's like 50, 60 something episode.
So worth it. I love Deadwood. That was so well done.
You know they're making a movie.
Oh, that figures.
Yeah.
That figures.
Yeah, I mean there's classic stuff I've seen like Breaking Bad and everything, but yeah, a lot of people are saying that television and web series, something like a Breaking Bad or now Better Call Saul or even this series.
Or Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale.
You go on and on and on. That they're more, it's really replacing films as, you know, as far as sophisticated, intelligent entertainment.
I think Netflix is very clever, though, because with Hulu, you have to subscribe to that service to get the show that you want to see. Where with Netflix, you know, it's an extra thing you get because you've already got Netflix.
Yeah. Of course, you could be like me and go through websites that are completely legal and you could get all of them. You don't have to pay a dime. But once again, that's completely legal, by the way.
Of course, because we would never advocate that anybody do anything illegal.
No, why? Why? I don't even know why you're bringing that up.
I have a lot of students like you, by the way. They've seen a whole lot of stuff and they're not at all concerned about access to anything because they can find everything and they do.
Yeah. And I think that's, once again, we'll get to Maniac eventually, but talking about that, it could be like...
Let's start with the title, though. What do you think of the title?
It's interesting. Because...
What do you think when you think the word maniac?
You think somebody's crazy.
Or somebody who's out of control.
Yeah.
Not just crazy, because you can be quiet and crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maniac implies carnage.
Yeah, or that, or just, you know, screaming madly, raving about things.
It's so not that.
No. Like, I guess it's mainly to Jonah Hill because he's suffering some mental illness, but he's never loses control or temper or gets angry, except for that one time we talked about we had a blip when he thought his wife was, you know, was a plant for the FBI or something. And he was screaming at her.
Well, you know, and Jonah Hill is always so understated, too. Mm-hmm. You know, to have him be the star of something called Maniac, you're expecting some sort of over-the-top emotional outburst, like every episode, and that doesn't really happen.
No, and
Emma Stone acts more maniacal, actually.
Yeah, and she's more foul mouthed and
vivid.
Yeah, vivid and scheming, I would say. Yeah, and it's what I really liked about this show as well is that you know, the future of it. It's, I'm not even sure if it's, is it really, is it's like almost like not even an alternate present.
Well, you know, if you notice, there's no cell phones, right? It's all landlines.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of trapped in a, it's like 80s warp, but today.
Yeah, it's like, it's, I wrote a contemporary, futuristic, and retro universe.
That's actually a great description.
Because everything, it looks like, you know, the cars look modern, the houses and everything look modern.
The clothes look modern. Clothes look modern. The hairstyles are modern.
Yeah. But then you have like all the technology, like even like the font of the show, Maniac, when you see the font, it looks like 80s style, or even like mainly I think of IBM, that yes. IBM font. And the computers are all very 80s-ish. Everything, all the technology feels like it's something from the 80s, even the graphics when they're in the lab and it's like sleep time, and it looks like a graphic from like an old 80s game. But then you have, you know, so it looks a bit in the past, a bit in the future, because you're having like all this technology with the drug testing and everything with this, you know, very advanced computer. So that's futuristic. The two ones I wrote down that really reminds me of is Brazil, Terry Gilliam's mm-hmm. Brazil, and even a bit of Blade Runner. Because even in Blade Runner, you think of all the meshing of the cultures in L.A. where it's almost predominantly dominated by the Japanese. And even this, like, culture and everything, especially with the people that are running this program, it's dominated by the Japanese.
Except nobody is quite as cool as anybody in Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. Everybody's very ordinary.
Yes.
You know, even the mad scientist people are really kind of regular folks mm-hmm. with, you know, a killer technology.
Yeah.
What do you think of the technology itself? That they're purporting that you could work your way through all your traumas, and it, you know what it reminded me of is what all the hype you hear about Scientology, about becoming clear, like working through all your traumas and then you're done with them. That's what it made me think of.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting, because you take these pills and it's three stages, right? And then at the end you remember it, and then that, you know, beginning you remember the worst event of your life, and then at the it's your confrontation. You confront it, and then supposedly you're going to be. Is it implied that after you confront it, you're going to be. You made peace with it. You're going to be good now.
Yeah, you're going to be good now. A, B, and C pills.
Yeah, A, B, and C.
And I thought it was interesting how Emma Stone had managed to become dependent on the pills mm-hmm. and had to sneak her way into the trial. Did they tell us how she got the initial pills?
I think eventually she probably volunteered first, eventually, and then I think once she realized that. She became, you know, she could relive this moment with her sister, even though horrible it was, but she just wants to
torment
her, but just see her one more time. I think that's what she became, you know, that then she probably found other ways to get around it, and she started blackmailing one of the people on the staff. Yeah. And like the building of the world is also really interesting. Like you said, like there's no cell phones. They all use like old, you know, old fashioned rotary phones. And like even like bit of Blade Runner with the street cleaners, but like when Blade Runner it's like these big street cleaners, and this one it's just like this tiny little thing. I love the part when like it's like stuck up a tree, so it's like air, and then Emma
like
Stone,
a Roomba gone mad.
Yeah, and then Emma Stone just like picks it up and then just like, here you go, little buddy. And you even have the ad buddies, which
I thought
that
was so genius. And at first Emma Stone talks about paying for something with ad buddy, and you're like, what's that? And they won't accept it. And then you realize it's allowing yourself to be followed around all day by somebody who just constantly gives you this barrage of advertising.
So that's what it is. They'll pay for your whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But then like the whole day they just like, you know, do you want this? Do you want this? And they just sell you all this product.
It sounded so plausible.
Yeah.
I could see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean,
not in a good way.
That's something would say if you wanted to buy yourself something, like say a car or a meal or whatever, would you be willing to do that? Get it free, but you don't have to pay a cent for it. But you have somebody following you around all day trying to sell you something.
Yes.
Would you want to do that?
And are you in breach of contract if you put earphones in and don't listen, the way
yeah.
you do with real ads? Like when you bring up a YouTube video and you have to wait 14 minutes, do you mute it?
Yeah.
So do I.
Oh, actually,
just out of spite.
I just use ad blocker. That way I don't have to worry about that. But yeah, because nobody likes advertisements. But I got to think, like, if it's free, I mean, how many things could you get out of that for free? Have somebody pay it for you. But, you know, you don't have to, you know, you just have somebody follow you around. I don't know. I'd be like, if I, how many, I would want to test that, like. can I get a free car? And all I have to do is have somebody follow me around for, you know, a day?
It wouldn't be a day, though. I mean, for a car, I would think it would be a year.
Oh, really? So.
Oh, yeah. I think it depends on the value of the item.
I'm curious. Do they establish the rules in the show?
No, I'm just thinking how it would work if it was real.
Because I want to know a little bit more about this ad buddy thing. Because
maybe I could work it to my advantage.
Yeah.
No, I think nothing is really free. I think, you know, you're giving up something else, and it has to be of equal value. So your time.
Good point.
And that's, you know, one of the things you can't.
Yeah, and another thing I was wondering about the ad buddy is, like, do you have to, like, say yes to one of those ads and be like, yes, I'll do it? Because if you don't, like, no, 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 and then would you be...
Does he get more aggressive?
Yeah. And, like, basically, I'm not leaving until you say yes to something. And then, like, eventually you could just say yes to whatever the first thing was, and then you're like, okay, I'm done for the day.
And then you find yourself with a whole living room full of Amway.
Yeah.
No, the ad buddy, that was one of the details that I thought was really quite clever.
Yeah, because, like you said, it's not something extremely futuristic, but it's still something that you don't see in today's society.
Here's the real question. Would you be willing to work for AdBuddy?
I would.
I mean,
depending on if the pay's good. I mean, sure, the person may be annoyed by you, but all you got to do is just, like, sit next to him and, like, are you willing to try this? Are you willing to try this? Read from a card? I mean, there's worse jobs out there.
There are definitely worse jobs out there.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things looking up on this is it was based on a Norwegian series mm-hmm. of the same name. It's a comedian. I think his last name's Espen. I forgot. He plays himself, and he's a mental patient, and he has all these fantasies where he's like this cool, suave, like businessman and everything. And from what I've read, it's pretty, besides the fact that both shows focus on somebody who's a mental patient, that's pretty much it. There's none of the things about the drug testing or anything else are in that series. I was curious. Have you taken a look at any of the Norwegian series?
I haven't. I don't have this, you know, open vein to the internet that you speak of. So, no, I have not seen it, but I would be fascinated to see it because I think the premise is actually a little more interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting, even though I do think the way they did it in this Netflix series is they've expanded it more and made it more than just person has a fantasy where they escape into their everyday lives. So I think this is, granted, I haven't seen the show, so I can't make 100% accurate judgment, but I do think that this show is more interesting than the Norwegian one.
Okay, well, we'll have to get our hands on the original and see.
Yeah, from completely legal websites.
Did you think that Jonah Hill really had a mental condition? Because I thought they were just bullying him.
Yeah, I think he has a condition, but that it was forced on him because the way he's been abused by his family. The fact that he knows his brother did that to that woman, but they're making him lie so he can get out of it. And, you know, even though he knows his brother's terrible, he knows his family treats him like crap, yet he still has to bail them out at the end. And if he doesn't, he'll be the black sheep, or even more of a black sheep.
But in the beginning, he's pretty clear that he's on board. So why do they go through all of these extra steps to make him think that he's... make him doubt himself.
Do you think he was on board, or was he just like they were just kind of putting it into it, like you need to bail him out. You need to. Like, of course she was lying. Of course she was lying. Like, she's just trying to get money out of him. That's the whole thing that they kept saying. You know, she's lying. She's just trying to blackmail us. He's a good person. He would never do a thing like that. I think he knew because he saw what happened. And I think, but just because he was had this repeated and jammed into his head nonstop, I think that was the thing that made probably why he was a bit more willing in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, because in the beginning, I thought he seemed pretty malleable. He wasn't angry with his family. He wasn't looking for a way out.
I think he was a little... I think you can see it there. It's not like I said, like you said with Jonah Hill, he's not like
he's
freaking out and screaming, but like you can see, he's looking at the picture... And he's not in the family photo, but he's, like, shown up in, like, a separate family photo right next to it with just him. I think it's slowly just picking at him bit by bit. He's not saying anything. And the fact that he has a crush on his brother's fiance, I think everything, little things just picking at him. But he wants a way out, but maybe he's just not fully – he doesn't realize it himself yet, probably. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that might be true.
Mm-hmm.
But he seems less likely to go along the further he gets into this memory thing.
Yeah. And that's what's really probably what the most notable thing about the show is that it had once they do these drug testings and they're basically in their minds, it really turns into this really out there, outlandish, like fantasy sequences. Like
each, Game of Thrones was one of like them. I thought that was bizarre.
Yeah, the Game of Thrones one, but even like the first one when it's like set in the 90s and Jonah Hill has this classic mullet and he's wearing a Warren Moon jersey and, you know, Emma Stone's talking like Margot Robbie from Wolf of Wall Street. And then, like, they're trying to rescue a pet lemur. It has that. And then, what, there's this, it's like the 1920s, and they're, like, trying to steal this, they're at a seance convention, but they're trying to steal this, like, lost chapter of Don Quixote.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, you have the Game of Thrones one, and then, like, you know, right along with that, you have the, you know, where he's a gangster, and he's ratting on his family. And then, oh, what was the other one? Like, either they had the Game of Thrones one, there was the one after that. The last one. Wasn't there another one? Or am I missing it?
There was one after the Game of Thrones one. I don't know why I'm blanking on it.
I'm blanking too.
But see, Don Quixote makes sense because Don Quixote is about a man who is lost in his fantasies and doesn't know the difference between reality and what's fake.
Mm-hmm.
So that's perfect. It's a perfect metaphor for what's going on in their heads. It's happening, but it's not happening. Or it happened, and you're reliving it.
Yeah.
Or you're stuck in your mind. So Don Quixote makes sense. But Game of Thrones?
Oh, I think that was the thing, because her younger sister was, you know, into all these fantasy movies and everything. And even that's the thing, when she kind of breaks she kind of breaks and realizes that she's in the dream, she's like, oh, of course it's a fantasy, because you were always into this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it's interesting the way they all connect, where they're both in it. And like, they're both like, oh, the last one was the one with the alien.
Right, yeah, the alien.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
The one with the alien. But yeah, so it's every little bit has like character, you know, people from their real lives playing other people. Like, you see Sally Field in a few of them.
Well, I didn't even recognize it first.
Yeah, it was funny. You see Sally Field, and then you see, you know, you see his brother, she sees her mom. And, you know, they see people from the, you know, the testing facility. So you see everything. And that's really interesting that it plays on for quite a few episodes. And that's one thing I really liked about the show, where it really goes for this, you know, this dream, almost Inception, like dream within dreams of world.
Yeah, I thought that was actually one of the really more clever things about it, the way it kept doing that. And it reminded me of an old Twilight Zone episode where they kept redoing the situation and it had the same people, but they would change roles. So the person who was your mother in real life was now your sister, and your sister was like the neighbor. But it was always the same cast of characters. They just mixed up their roles.
Yeah.
They kind of did a little of that.
Yeah.
Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah, that's actually a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
Where this guy, you know, the episode where the guy's reliving the same, he's getting on death row and everything, and he always relives the same thing where he's on death row and then he gets executed. There's the person who's the judge plays one of the wardens. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's
very clever,
very classic episode. And one of the things people criticized about the show is that the ending, it just feels overly sentimental. Or the whole last episode is basically none of the fantasy or dream elements are in the last episode. It's basically everybody kind of the after effects. So Justin Thoreau and the Miguchi, was that her name? Mizumi. They get back together. Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, like Jonah Hill finally realizes that he has to tell the truth and tells what his horrible things his brother done. And then he gets committed. Then Emma Stone gets, you know, sees her dad and sort of, you know, sets things right with him. And then Emma Stone and Jonah Hill get together at the end. So it feels a little bit overly sentimental, where everything turns out happily ever after, a little bit.
Well, you know what I thought was sort of a missing element was, you know, it's about this testing that goes wrong, that Jonah Hill and Emma Stone are kind of linked together because things are shorting out in the computer. But they don't show you what would happen if nothing went wrong. Like, what if in terms of this technology, how would it work if it worked? We only see what happens when something goes wrong.
Yeah, because there's other people in the testing and at the very last bit, and I'm supposing that their simulations and everything went as planned.
Right. So are they you know, happy? Have they resolved all of their issues? They should have done a little bit more with when it doesn't go wrong, what happens? Because all you see is what happens to the two main characters.
Yeah, when you see at the end, like, everybody's waking up and they seem dazed. They're all very sweaty. And, yeah, because you never, like, the one guy who supposedly who works the system and, like, does it a lot of times so he can get the money, he just kind of walks around in a daze. I'm wondering, are they good or did the computer screw with their heads?
Yeah. See, you kind of want to know that.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I thought was interesting about the ending. So, spoiler alert, at the very end, Emma Stone springs Jonah Hill loose from the mental facility. They ride away together. And one of the things I was like, is this going to go turn into The Graduate? Because you see them riding away. They're like laughing. They've pulled it off. They're carefree. They're planning on running away together. And it's not like it's The Graduate where it's just full on where they're happy. And then like at the end, they're just kind of having this, oh my God, what are we doing kind of look. But you can see they're happy in this one, and then you can just see a bit of uncertainty. So I thought that was interesting. Maybe they feel like, well, what now? Are we actually going to do this, or you know, what's going to happen? Like, were we actually going to get away with this, or are we going to get caught?
Well, an actual perfect Graduate ending would have been the two of them saying, "Well, what are we going to do now?" And the other one could say, "Plastics."
Yeah, and with Emma Stone, I feel that her arc is a little bit more, she has a bit of more arc for her character, I think, than Jonah Hill. Because, like you say, she's addicted to this drug because she just wants to relive the final moment with her sister. And I think, you know, and she's always trying to push people away and everything. She has this rocky relationship with her dad. And who is she living with? Was it her mom she's living with? I don't know who.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Was it her aunt?
A relative.
Relative. So, yeah, she's not living the best life. But I think, like I said, at the end, when she's finally able to confront the past traumatic incident, and I think after that, it's sort of her sort of coming to terms with it. I mean, she sees her dad, and her dad's, like, was he stuck in, like, some sort of cryogenic kind of chamber thing? I didn't quite get that.
I didn't
that
quite
was
get either. That either.
I guess, he's shutting himself off, but at the end, he gets out and it's Hank's area and and then she decides that, you know, Jonah Hill was the guy that was always helping me out. He was doing this and then she wants to be with him. I feel like Emma Stone has a more bit of an arc than Jonah Hill in this one.
Well, she's the driven one. She's figured out what's going on. She wants to work the system to her advantage. Jonah Hill is just sort of a victim. You know, he's been placed into this thing, you know, because he's the mental patient. Mm-hmm. So you know, you feel more sympathy for him. Everything
yes,
that happens
definitely.
To him, you feel very sympathetic. Emma Stone's character, you know, from the get-go, you don't really like her. She's very pushy. And mm-hmm. then you find out her backstory. You find out she's, you know, she's got some skeletons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it going to what you said about Jonah Hill, I think you said he was very understated. And, you know, I remember growing up in high school, I remember him in Superbad. Mm-hmm. And he was in a lot of kind of those teen raunchy comedies, and he was always kind of the sweet guy,
either
the sweet one or the very foul-mouthed fat guy. And you know, his career is kind of interesting because he started out like that, but then he did stuff like Moneyball, and then he started losing weight and doing more serious stuff, and then like he did Wolf of Wall Street, so he went back to being fat and being like vulgar.
Uh-huh.
And then now he's sort of he's very, like you've seen this show, he's very skinny again, and he's playing more serious, more, you know, roles. And he's not only doing that, but like this. Since speaking of this year, his movie mid-90s, he directed. He didn't star in, but he's directed it. His first ever directing film is out, and that's supposedly getting big on the independent film circuit. So he's an interesting guy. Like, he started out in one way, thinking he's just going to stuck doing these kind of frat house raunchy comedies the rest of his life. But you know, he's kind of been going on and off with that, and I think he's had an interesting career.
Mid-90s was actually, I would recommend seeing that.
Yeah, I want to see it too.
It strikes a nice note, and he has something to say about what it's like to come of age and how you look up to people and you want to be like them and you want them to like you. And that kind of microcosm of what I think of as just middle school. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not quite tall enough. You're not quite muscular enough. You can't really play sports. You can't really do anything, but you want to do all of these things. And what you want is just out of reach. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, he minds that kind of character, even when he's being vulgar, the overweight guy with the opinions and whatnot. He always kind of makes you see that middle school kid who wants to make friends and who wants people to like him.
So you don't think that... So the movie, I haven't seen it yet, but is it not like a lot of nostalgia, like remember the 90s?
It is, but see, I was never a teen boy, and I was never into skateboarding, so it was a new world for me.
Okay.
But it was very relatable. You know, you could definitely see where the kid was coming from, and all the other characters as well. You know, the kids he's looking up to, the kid who, you know, wants him to look up to him, but, you know, he's the same status. It hits a lot of really nice notes. It's a nice move for Jonah Hill because it feels very personal.
Right. I'll definitely be sure to check it out because I do want to see that. One of the things we haven't talked about yet is Kari Joji Fukunaga. He directed the series. He created it with somebody else. I can't remember the guy's name. I've known a few things of the biggest thing I know him was he directed the first season of True Detective.
Which was the best one.
The best one. The second one, we don't even need to discuss that. But the first season was absolutely amazing. I mean, the way he, the way he shoots the bayou of Louisiana, it's gorgeous to look at. It was a really great show, and the very, Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson were amazing in it. Highly recommend that.
And that was a Netflix original series.
No,
right?
It was HBO.
HBO, okay.
But he did direct a Netflix film called Beasts of No Nation with Idris Elba. 3 years ago. It's been on my to-watch list forever. I have not gotten around to seeing it.
I haven't seen it either, but I really do
heard
like it.
Heard it's really good. Yeah, heard it's great.
I'll watch it just for that.
Yeah. And kind of speaking of in the news, he was chosen to direct the latest James Bond movie, which I think will be the last one with Daniel Craig. They're probably going to move on after this.
They are talking about Idris Elba for Bond.
Yeah, they've been saying that forever. I don't think it's going to happen.
I could get behind that. He's very suave.
I could see it. I think he's a little bit. I mean, if they do it, they would just be like a one off. I think because he's already hitting 50 almost. And I'm thinking that might be a little bit too old to be Bond. Do you really want another Roger Moore who's just like way too old to be hopping around and jumping? I think I'm really interested because if you could kind of see how he just shoots action because you've seen the first season of True Detective, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you remember that like famous long take when they're in the ghetto area and he's trying to set up with that one guy who knows the drug dealer is supposedly the suspect in the missing girl case. And so he's like, they're raiding this house and he's trying to get him out of there while just crap is going down. There's gunfights and everything. And it's this long take where he's going in the house. They're going through all this area and the cops are coming. You remember that scene?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you kind of even see that in Maniac when it's the scene with the aliens. And then Emma Stone's supposed to be like this CIA assassin and she keeps like taking guys out and everybody's rushing. So the way he shoots action is really good. I think I'm really curious to see what he does with the James Bond movie because he actually replaced Danny Boyle because Danny Boyle was the original guy, but he backed out. So I'm excited. It's coming out next year. I'm gonna keep my eyes out because he's a good director.
Yeah, I would go see any Bond movie just to see what they're gonna do with it next. Although Daniel Craig is not one of my favorite Bond men.
Okay, then the last question I have is just anything else you want to bring up about Maniacs or Netflix or anything else?
I have an interesting fun fact to know and tell about Emma Stone, that she has matching bird tattoos with her mother. The birds referring to the Beatles song Blackbird, and Sir Paul McCartney drew the birds himself.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's one thing. Then there's this quote from her that I think is awesome. She says, "You're only human. You live once, and life is wonderful, so eat the red velvet cupcake." Reminded me a little bit of The Matrix, where the red pill or
the
blue
pill.
So eat that red velvet cupcake and find out what is on the other side.
Okay. All right, then. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing director Kari Joji Fukunaga and his 2018 miniseries Maniac. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Tuesday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Tune into Dragon Digital Radio to hear the show a week before it's on Podbean. This is Westhaven. I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, I don't know what's real and what's not.